Welcome everybody to the All About Symbian Insight podcast. It's insight number 172. We're recording this on Monday the 27th of June 2011. I am Steve Litchfield, and with me up in hell I have
David Gilson. Hello.
Yes, he's not chairing this week, so we're hoping he's going to be doing some answering and some commenting. Also up in Edinburgh we have
Looking at the tennis, I'm currently the British Ewan Spence.
And down in Sussex,
it's Ray Blanford. Hello everybody.
And none of us are glued to the Wimbledon because we've got work to do. We've got a podcast to record. First item of news, Nokia in an event in Asia, their Nokia Connection event, have announced their N9, which is not Symbian, but is worth mentioning in passing because it is relevant and there are some implications. It's based on Migo Harmattan. Now, Rafe, I'm a man with questions today. Now, I understand what Migo is. It's the combination of Moblin and MIMO to produce this new Intel Nokia combined operating system. And then all of a sudden, we've seen this new word, Harmattan, come up. A, what is Harmattan? And B, is it in any way relevant to All About Symbian and the phone world going forwards?
Well, the first thing you need to know is Harmattan is a type of wind, and that's because Nokia have been using code names for their Migo releases and previously their MIMO releases that were actually winds around the world. Where Harmattan is escaping me right now, but basically Harmattan is actually a code name for a software release that Nokia have been doing. And in this particular case, it's essentially based on Migo, but there are some differences. As you can imagine, when it was transitioning from MIMO into Migo, there's kind of this intermediary stage where it wasn't quite MIMO and it wasn't quite Migo, and that's really what Harmattan is. And so, yes, it is relevant because it's what's running on the N9. It's also being described as Migo 1.2 for the Nokia N9. So in one sense, you can think of it as a Nokia flavor of Migo. And in terms of compatibility, they both use Qt for their kind of applications and there's some common APIs, but there are some packaging differences and it's not necessarily as simple as just repackaging an application to make it run. You may need to redo the UI and things like that. Is it relevant for the Symbian world? Well, yes, it is, because obviously this is one of the things that was originally intended to replace Symbian in terms of Nokia software strategy. Obviously, that all changed on February the 11th. But I still think it's worth looking at because, obviously, Migo is interesting in its own accord, regardless of anything else. So I think people should always maintain a wider interest in what's going on in the smartphone and the mobile world in general. Is it particularly relevant for the future? Well, that's open to debate, really, because Nokia has said there probably won't be another Nokia Migo device, at least not in a sort of immediate roadmap. Who knows, in a few years' time, these things sometimes come back. But a lot of the technology in it, in particular the design and also the UI, which is very particular, you can get a load of information on this by going to swipe.nokia.com and also having a look on our sister site, allaboutmigo.com. There's a load of information there. Some of that will be reused, and actually what Nokia were really emphasizing in the briefings that they were giving in their announcements is that a lot of the innovation in the N9 in terms of hardware design, but also in terms of user experience, UI and that kind of thing, will find homes in future Nokia devices. Now, that possibly could include Symbian devices, but will certainly include Windows Phone devices, which, of course, are going to be replacing Symbian, and so, therefore, I think it's probably of interest to anyone listening to this podcast. But there were also hints that some of this technology might well make it into what Nokia's taken to referring to as the next billion devices, which is really Series 40. I think they may be referring to the next billion because there may be a rebrand for Series 40 ahead or a subtle evolution of that. But for all intents and purposes, you can think of it the same space that Series 40 implies. So yes, I think actually this is very relevant. And quite apart from the fact, purely on its own merits, the N9 is a really nice looking device. I got some hands-on time with it and I was really quite impressed. The design more than anything else, but also, as I mentioned, the swipe UX. So, you know, as a geek, you know, shiny new toy and all that.
Yeah, well, let's just go over some of the basic specs, because I think it's a fair assumption that something similar may well creep into the Symbian world, running Symbian Bell. They Nokia have trailed, they're going to have 1 gigahertz processors plus on Symbian over the next 12 months, and it's entirely conceivable that something like this may happen with Symbian Bell on in, say, 6 to 9 months' time. So we're looking at a gigahertz processor, a solid single-piece polycarbonate body that's been milled out, much as Apple mill out the aluminium bodies. It's got a seamless curved Gorilla Glass screen, 8-megapixel camera with Carl Zeiss optics. There's a whole piece on Nokia Conversations at the moment saying that the results from this get up close to what the N8 can produce at 12 megapixels with its bigger sensor, which is, I find kind of interesting. But if Damien Dinning says it, then it must be true. And I am inclined to believe him. There's obviously a lot of work that's gone behind the scenes. This also, the N9's got 64 gigabytes of internal memory. I don't think it's expandable, though, Rafe. Maybe you can confirm that.
No, it's not expandable. It's actually got a micro SIM card slot. It's the only kind of slot mechanism. That's notable because it's not standard SIM card size, so a bit of an issue there if you want to swap SIMs. But it's worth pointing out there is a 64 gigabyte version, but I think most people will end up with the 16 gigabyte version, so there's actually going to be two variants.
Okay. Right. Yeah, apparently the black one looked really nice. It's a 3.9-inch touchscreen, so it's a slightly odd size, but it is at an Android-like resolution of 854 by 480. And most people who were at the event said that it was pretty impressive. There's Pentaband 3G, which you kind of come to expect from Nokia these days, plus all the usual Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, near-field communications, which will definitely take off this year, I think. And most impressively, Ray, there's a whole range of built-in applications. So people like me who say, quite rightly, I mean, most people only need a handful of really good apps plus the built-in OS, and they're good to go. In this case, the built-in OS includes a lot of the basics like Skype and Twitter and Facebook, so they really are good to go.
Yes, I mean, this actually draws on quite a lot of what the N900 had. Of course, that was the MoMo device, and that had very good sort of communications kind of out of the box. It's kind of a system or software called Telepathy, which aims to combine things like Skype and other IM into one. So it's very good in that department. And obviously that's been built on a bit with the rise of Facebook and Twitter. And also there are a lot of other applications, as you say, you know, Joyco's put Wi-Fi out of the box. Actually not that different to some of the way that the Symbian device is now coming with increasing amounts of third-party software. As I sort of hinted at earlier, there is this sense that this is going to be a bit of an orphan device because it's going to be the only MeeGo device from Nokia. We have to sort of say there may be some, you know, there may be something else, but to all intents and purposes, this can be treated as the kind of the only and first MeeGo device from Nokia. So that does mean that it may be less attractive for developers to do things too. You may get some crossover from the MeeGo world. Actually, I think you'll get bigger crossover from Symbian Qt developers porting across their applications for the N9, because that should be relatively straightforward to do. And certainly in terms of the cost and time, I think it'll probably be justifiable, especially if the N9 manages to sell a decent number of units. But it's one of the reasons I think we're emphasizing the number of stuff or applications out of the box, is there is this problem that there may not be such a healthy application ecosystem when the device actually goes live. But as I say, yeah, Qt does provide some answers there, but unquestionably it's not going to be like the Android or the iPhone world, which I feel is kind of the area that the N9 is most obviously competing with. In fact, I would say the N9 is most obviously a direct competitor to the iPhone in terms of the kind of the style, the pricing, and some of the things it does, its positioning, if you will.
Yeah, it's kind of tempting to think of this as a technology demonstrator, really. Nokia is saying, hang on, we are at the cutting edge still. These are the things we're working on, and here's physical proof. Come and play with it, even if it's not actually going to be developed, and even if they won't actually be a successor, and even though it may not actually be even sold in the UK and US. And David, do you want to just take this one or comment?
MeeMo, unlike the tablets that came out with MeeMo and VN9 seem to be as if they've been like science projects for Nokia, which is a shame. There is a potential for the N9 to have a lot of good software made if the community jump on board. But for the community to want to do that, there's got to be enough volume of sales. And to be enough volume of sales, there's got to be the ecosystem to support it. So there is a bit of a, well, we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. I mean, I am very interested to see how it goes on. And I think it, in a way, maybe the ecosystem argument is less relevant to the N9 because it is pretty well featured out of the box, and it is a good technology demonstration in a way, because it has a very unique user interface. There's actually no home screen, so people who are used to Symbian using home screen widgets, there's none of that on the N9, whereas iPhone users are just used to having an app grid and nothing else. The N9 has an app grid, it has an events view, which has like a free list for like events, status updates, and calendar entries and notifications. Sorry, and then there's a live preview of all the tasks running on the device, because it has real time multitasking, and you can even pinch to zoom into the live previews of applications. So in a way, I really think, just from a design point of view, the N9 is really what the iPhone should have been many years ago.
Yeah, I think that's right, David. And I know you and I talked a lot about this in the All About Migo podcast. So if people want to listen to that, again, details on allaboutmigo.com. Going back to what Steve said about being a technology demonstrator, I think that's very much the case, because we've had a lot of people asking, you know, why did Nokia switch to Windows Phone? And this sort of comes around again and again. And my answer has always been about it was the kind of things that they got by partnering with Microsoft makes them able to create an ecosystem better. And that ecosystem element to it, I think, is far stronger than any sort of technical argument you can come up with. But as I say, we discussed that elsewhere. But this idea of a technology demonstrator is quite interesting, because it actually proves that Nokia are able to do some really interesting things in design, both from a hardware point of view and also software. And so I think to a certain extent, you know, some of the buzz that's happened around the N9 is pretty good sign for Nokia's future. If you can build some of that into the Windows Phone devices, and as Steve suggested, maybe even one or two Symbian devices still to come, but also then mobile phones as well, that puts them in a pretty healthy position. And the fact they can still get people talking about their hardware and their software design is really quite positive for them. And having had so much negative Nokia news recently, I think it's quite refreshing to see them come out with this that's had, you know, a positive reception in the media in general.
Yeah, you had a comment.
I had, yes, and it's slightly bigger. Rafe, can I just take you back to February the 11th? One of the things that we were impressed about was the clear vision that Stephen Aylott managed to announce on February the 11th, irrespective of the implementation. He had a very clear-cut message. The launch of the N9 has not been a clear-cut message, I think, to the markets. Obviously, you know, there's the whole, everyone thinks it's wonderful specs, but we have the point of, it's an app economy, will that work in the marketplace, that David touched on here. But I'm unsure that when you have Nokia building up to Windows Phone, trying to push Symbian, they then, you know, talking about Series 4 as well, they then throw the N9 in at this point in time. And I just find it sending out really confused mixed signals, and I suspect that's me being Scottish. So what's actually the strategy here? Where's the clear through line that we're meant to pick up and have confidence that Elop can take Nokia through to the end of 2011 and on into 2012?
I agree with what you're saying, and I'm tempted to say, from a pure strategy point of view, it might have been better to cancel the N9 and just not talk about it at all. However, clearly a lot of effort had gone into developing it, and by the time, you know, Elop came along, I think sufficient progress that had already been made that it made sense to release it. And I was talking about there kind of the signals it gives in terms of Nokia's ability to innovate, and then what Nokia was saying about the technology, the innovation being reused elsewhere, is very, very true. And interestingly, the way they announced this, they barely mentioned Migo at all. The emphasis was on the innovation in terms of hardware, the sort of polycarbonate shell that Steve was talking about, and all of those hardware features, plus the swipe UI, with really big hints that these were going to be reused. And as we'll see, there was one immediate result of that. But also, again, as I say, in Series 14 Windows Phone. And so, yes, I'm inclined to agree with you, and it does send mixed messages. But if you listen to the way that Nokia talked about it, it was very clear they saw it as a step on to other things. I think the media, particularly the blogs, picked up and go, ooh, shiny device, it's running Migo, technical interest in that, and kind of missed the bigger message from Nokia that this was actually kind of a stepping stone to other things. And so in one sense, yes, they're mixed messages, but actually, you know, as so often happens, you know, the company comes out with a message and people don't really listen to it. And so it's, I think you do need to see this as a stepping stone to other things, albeit on its own, it's, you know, a very nice product. And I've got lots of time for Migo and these kind of things. But you do have to think longer term about Nokia's strategy. It's, you know, not about the now. You know, this is kind of the peak evolution, if you like, of the previous Nokia approach. We now need to start thinking about what comes next for Nokia.
Yeah, yeah, but at the same time, right after the February the 11th message, you were at Barcelona. They had to do the message again and go, no, what we really meant was this. And partly it was a backtrack, partly it was a re-emphasis to get everybody focused on the right point. It's almost like they've done it again. They've done a big announcement and everybody's like, oh, hold on, what should we be focusing on? And you're saying that they didn't quite get the message over again. Surely that should raise up a little warning bell somewhere that the message needs to be strong. And it's not as strong as it could be. And that's twice the same sort of issues popped up. Am I being too devil's advocate here?
Well, perhaps, but no, I think it is an issue they need to address. And there was no doubt this was always going to be a bit of a communications nightmare. But on the other hand, you know, what are you going to do? the media is always going to read other things into your announcement than that which you may wish. And so there's a responsibility on both sides for this. And I think, honestly, if they, you know, not said anything at all, the internal politics and some of the stuff around MeeGo might have been more damaging. So it's better to do it this way, even if it's not an ideal situation all in all.
Yeah, before we move on to some directly Symbian-specific stuff, I just want to get one other big news item out of the way. And a couple of days after the N9 announcement, a quote, internal meeting, Stephen Elop stood up in front of a TV camera set up and said, by the way, everybody, turn off your cameras. This is top secret. And then proceeded to show a device called C-Ray, which is the Nokia's first Windows Phone Mango design. And it was basically shown off and demonstrated by an official demonstrator. The fact they use a multi-camera setup and professional audio, although it was a kind of classed as an internal leak that got out to the outside, you have to wonder whether it was actually deliberate by Nokia. Rafe, you were watching this C-Ray video. What did you make of it?
Well, that was interesting. I mean, basically, this was N9, but running Windows Phone. There were a couple of differences, notably a camera hardware button on the right-hand side of the device, and presumably they'll have to do something with the bottom devices for sort of the start button, back button, the search button. I would probably disagree with you. I don't actually think the leak would be deliberate. It's probably fair enough to say that, you know, this would have been placed on the Nokia company intranet, which literally thousands of people have access to, both employees but also some external contractors. So the chance of some bit of this leaking is going to be higher. But, I mean, I think that would have been at most a picture or people saying they were showing off the device rather than the whole video. So I don't necessarily see this as a deliberate leak in the sense they thought this video would get out. It might be semi-calculated in the sense, like the burning platform memo, it's not something they deliberately wanted to get out, but there might have been a realization it might happen. So I think the speculation around it being deliberate is a bit unfounded, to be honest. You know, that doesn't happen, and companies don't really want that to happen. That said, it's not entirely unfair to say it may serve the sort of priorities of the Nokia leadership team and Stephen Elop, in that it does tend to promote Windows Phone more, and I'm sure there are people within the MeeGo community a bit upset to see this steal the limelight from the N9 in quite such a quick fashion.
Yeah. There's to tempt the conspiracy theorist inside me says that Nokia kind of knew, because the N9 was a one-off, that they wanted to steer some of that excitement from the N9, which was really was picked up in a big way around the world, and kind of direct channel it towards what Nokia are doing in terms of carrying on the innovation, but in the new Windows Phone Wonder World that's coming up.
Okay. Seriously, Steve, how much of the Nokia organization are you aware of over the last 8 or 10 years? Trying to do a simple change, trying to decide what to do with a camera or a lens or the changing of the filter of the application for a JPEG. You know how slow they move. And now you're trying to tell me that they have this Machiavellian scheme that they will announce a phone that we've already discussed is a good hardware platform, that they will announce that, and they will then 2 days later set up a secret meeting for everybody in the company, which therefore means it's not a secret, just so they can tell the world, you know what, we've got an N9 as well. Steve, are you honestly telling me that Nokia's internal culture has a small department that can actually do things and make decisions that quickly and that evilly?
No, I think it was all kind of planned for a couple of months ahead.
Months of planning from Nokia. Your Honour, I request that last statement is withdrawn.
Go on, Rafe. Put an ounce of sense into this conversation.
Well, I mean, I sort of see the point that Ewan's making, but nonetheless, it's very interesting to see this, because obviously it suddenly makes Nokia's first Windows Phone device look a lot more interesting if they've got the design that's already been talked about as being really good around the various blogs, etc. And of course, people are then going to go, but it doesn't have the matching software. But I think what it would be fair to say is Windows Phone will have its own advantages, just as MeeGo does. But the fact that they're going to have it running on a bit of hardware that's already, I mean, quite rightly, in my opinion, having seen it as well, being praised, is pretty interesting. And suddenly the Windows Phone devices from Nokia seem a lot more real and a lot closer to me. And it's just worth saying, you know, usually we don't cover leaks in this podcast or on All About Symbian, but we did kind of make an exception in this case. When you've got a video of Stephen Elop presenting a device, it's rather a different kettle of fish, I think. And we felt we could add some context and a bit of colour to this story, particularly around whether this leak was deliberate or not. So that's why we're talking about it now.
Yeah, and we should also set all of this into the context that Symbian itself as a platform, as we keep reminding people, is officially now going to be supported until at least 2016, and we've still got another 3, 4, 5 Symbian devices yet to be announced over the next 9 to 12 to 18 months. So this is very much...
Well, actually, Steve, one of the things that came out at Nokia Connections in Singapore was there's going to be up to 10 more Symbian devices. And the implication was that'll be happening in the next year to 18 months or so. So that does rather suggest there's a lot more devices to come. And I think it's probably fair to say the majority of those will be sort of in the mid-tier, to C7 and below. But in that, one might expect there to be another high-end device, sort of not necessarily like the N8, but sort of similar pricing or something like that, which just goes to emphasize, you know, there's a lot still to come from Symbian, and clearly we're expecting there to be another big software update. And all the indications are that Bell, as I think it's probably widely known that's going to be the name, is a significantly bigger update than Anna is. And we also heard, actually, that Anna would be coming out shortly. It'll start shipping on the new devices in July. So that's the kind of the N8 and C7 as they come out the factory, and then will be available for over-the-air download for existing users by the end of August. The times on that are a bit woolly, simply because it's going to take a while for it to happen. So I'd actually expect the over-the-air updates to start in July and be mostly completed by August, but as usual, that does depend on operator certification and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So we just wanted to set the whole context of the N9 and C-Ray and the future of Symbian all into the context of the wider mobile world. So do thank you for being patient, gentle listener, as we've gone through all this non-Symbian stuff, but it is interesting, I think. One directly relevant story, the Ovi Store now has hit 6 million downloads a day. Contains more than 48,000 content items, with approximately 1,000 new items being added each week. Now, of this 48,000, Rafe, people will say, oh, well, that's mainly ringtones and themes, but you've now got a rough estimate for the number of actual applications and games within that, haven't you?
Yes, that's right. For Symbian applications and games, and that's everything from a 63rd edition right up to Symbian 3, the internal tracking we do at All About Symbian shows that there are about 25,000 of those applications. And if you consider that probably another half or so of that is, you know, then theme or customization elements of some sort or another, because that includes themes and ringtones, wallpapers, etc. And then the rest is probably Series 40 related content. But I think that's a pretty healthy number, and certainly that's grown pretty rapidly since this time last year. There's been a noticeable uptick in sort of application and game releases. And it's not just these uptick in terms of numbers, I think the quality has also gone up. We are seeing more applications that we think are sort of worthy of review, certainly than we had, I think, in the second half of last year.
Okay, Rafe, numbers, statistics, and lies and all of that, let's put that into context. Where does that stack up next to, say, like Android or iPhone, or maybe even the smaller ones like GetJar? I mean, is Ovi in the middle, ahead, behind?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, because I think although these numbers are very healthy and Nokia is showing good growth, it's really helpful to see this in context. With that said, Nokia are much better about releasing numbers, and so you can only make rough approximations for the competing platforms, the competing app stores. And you also have to allow for the fact that, you know, especially with something like the Apple App Store, that does include the iPad, which tends to have more applications downloaded. There's also the issue of updates. You know, if you look at some of the applications on Android or iOS, you know, you're seeing 5 or 6 updates, and that counts as a download each time when it's just one application. But anyway, the numbers for this, roughly speaking, are Apple's doing 24 million downloads a day, so obviously that's 4 times as many. Android is doing about 17 million. It's harder to estimate this because obviously there's a lot of growth going on in Android at the moment. Both of those are not out of sight, I think, as far as the Nokia Ovi Store is concerned. And in terms of growth, Nokia has sort of doubled its numbers in sort of the last 6 months or so, and that's similar to what Apple have done. The suggestion is Android might be slightly slower than that, but as I said, the estimate's hard. In terms of things like GetJar, that's very much slower. That's really only increased about 500,000 to 3.5 million in the last 6 months. The BlackBerry App Store, that's doing better. It's similar, about a doubling, but it's gone from about 1.5 2 million to about 3.5, so perhaps not quite as healthy as Nokia's Ovi Store there. In terms of the absolute number of devices, obviously Apple's App Store is leading, partly because it's doing more daily downloads. It's been around longer as well. It's, you know, in the many billions now. I think it's about 12 billion in total. And Android is, you know, about 3 billion, maybe 4 billion by now. So again, you know, not that big a difference as you might sometimes assume, given some of the hype that goes on around this. So for all the, you know, negative talk around Nokia's app and ecosystem efforts with Symbian and with Ovi, you know, the Ovi store I think is a pretty bright spot for them, certainly at the moment.
Go on, say something bad about the figures.
Say something bad about the figures. Well, they don't match up to their competition, and it really does speak towards where Nokia got itself into in the last few years. After all, there are more Symbian devices than anything else out there, so you would hope that they have the most downloads and, you know, the best business case for building applications for. But we know that's not the case, and obviously those numbers indicate it. But they are coming from behind, and so it's not entirely bad news. But yes, you know, their relative position is not where it should be, given, you know, their previous market position. But we kind of do know about that already. And it's sort of, that's kind of the reason why we've had to have this big strategy change back on February the 11th, yeah, because the ecosystem part of the kind of the Nokia equation was not delivering.
Yeah, there is an extra factor, of course, here, Rafe, and I'm sure most people listening to this will recognise that, but an awful lot of people who have bought Symbian-powered smartphones over the last 2, 3, 4 years, a lot of them tend to use them mainly as phones which do some smart things and don't necessarily dive into the app stores and app worlds in the same speed that people who perhaps buy iPhones, which are conceived and considered as mobile computers. That's the very first thing most people do. They dive in and download 50 apps. So there's a very different way of approaching it. I mean, Symbian OS is certainly shipped by Nokia, is pretty feature complete, and apart from things like adding social networking clients, most of the things that most people want most of the time are actually there on day one in the box.
That's absolutely right, and that also speaks towards the fact that Symbian has a greater proportion of mid-tier devices than I think any of the other platforms. I mean, incidentally, I think this is a reason sometimes the Android numbers aren't quite as impressive as people might expect them to be, because again, there's a lot of mid-tier devices, whereas Apple, it's all high-end devices where people download a lot of applications. And we should remind ourselves that downloads aren't everything. It's, you know, about whether you can sell them, and clearly iOS has been very good there. But it looks like Ovi Store's probably in the number two position in Android, which has been dominated by the free content, maybe a little bit behind. But I think what would be interesting is to break the numbers down and say, just look at mid-tier devices. And I suspect that actually Nokia is doing pretty well there, especially when you talk about the Series 40 level devices. If you compare those to what their competitors are doing, Nokia's actually got to the point where it does have an app store with content offerings for those devices, which you don't really see anywhere else. And the same kind of goes for the mid-tier. If you think about a device like the C601, it has the same application catalogue essentially as the N8. That's less true, obviously, for things like the 5230. But they're pretty impressive compared to some of the mid-tier Android devices, whereas we know there are problems with older versions of Android, be it, you know, a 1.6 Android device or something else, or just, you know, different screen resolutions or the processor not being powerful enough. You know, that fragmentation issue that's talked about is probably more profound, I think, in Android, although it is an issue in Symbian as well, of course. So I think it'd be quite interesting if you could break down those mid-tier numbers and look at where the performance is there. I mean, I think we already know very well that the performance of Nokia at the high end has not been good in the last few years. And, you know, as I said, that's what's led us to this point in the big strategy change. But in the sense that that mid-tier achievement is probably underrated by some of the commentators in the mobile industry, in my opinion.
Yeah, and just talking about breaking down the numbers, I mean, I'd like to see a demographic breakdown as well, because I think Steve hit the nail on the head there by saying about how feature complete a lot of Symbian, well, all Symbian phones are. And I think, at least anecdotally, in my experience, a lot of friends and relatives who are using what you would class as smartphones, including Symbian phones, aren't really in the headspace of like thinking, oh yes, I can go and grab an app for that, as Apple like to say. And it's kind of quite a revelation to them that they can actually browse the web on their phone, even now. So I think, yes, Apple has been selling apps for longer. Nokia was late to the game, and the performance of the Ovi Store hasn't been great either. But I think there are still, I think there's probably more people using Nokia phones who are still just using it as a phone, or at least just browsing the web, that than actually thinking of it as an app device, which is actually, I mean, the iPhone was aimed as an app device, whereas Nokia's are phone-centric. Yeah. So, yes.
Absolutely right, David. And I think all of this actually reminds us that it's still the beginning of the game, relatively speaking. There's a lot of growth left in smartphone devices, and even more so, I think, in apps on smartphones, and I wouldn't narrowly define it as apps either. I'd talk about services in general, and then HTML5 type content, which starts blurring the boundary between apps and services and that kind of thing. Because if you look at a lot of the way smartphones are used, they're not all used in the same way. And you know, Apple has been tremendously successful in its particular area about driving app usage. Ironic, given that when they first launched it, they said, you know, there's no need for apps, you don't need them. And kind of the app ecosystem was to an extent forced upon them, although maybe that's clever Steve Jobs speak. But the point being is there's actually, you know, it's still very much the beginning of the game. So as much as people like to say it's game over, I really don't believe that at all. You know, it is still very early days in this, from the way people think about it and they're using their devices. And that's, you know, only going to continue to be the case for the next little while. So there's a lot of growth left in the market. We've talked about that before, but I actually think that's even more true for kind of apps and services. If you like the ecosystem bit of phones, that ecosystem is really only just getting going. And everyone thinks about it as apps at the moment, but there's a lot more to it if you think about the ecosystem around devices in the home, connecting with your TV, whatever else it might be, your music system, sharing content, you know, then sharing content between other people's devices, things like that, the services. And you know, one of the points I think Nokia's made quite strongly in it recently is saying, you know, at the moment, smartphones and the ecosystem that goes with them are like when we first got the TV. And I mentioned this in the previous podcast, but I think it's a point that's worth repeating. To start with, they just stuck two faces on the TV that were talking heads. It was basically a picture version of radio. Only later on did things like the sitcoms develop and all those other bits of TV. And it's still going on today with red button TV and interactive TV. And I believe the same thing will apply to mobile. All the coolest use cases, all the most profitable ones, is the things that haven't yet been thought of. And that development, that sense of speed that's still going on, innovation to come, means, of course, that it's very dynamic in terms of competition. People can still establish themselves either as a completely new company or like Nokia seeking to come back into the game in a big way. And when you've got a company like Nokia that has the volume and the sort of existing customer base, that obviously has important implications for where you might see it going in the next few years.
Yeah, David, you've got your hand stuck up at the corner. What do you want to say?
Well, I was just going to say, I think this is a really telling issue for, talking about the N9, and people are saying, well, the N9 is dead on arrival because there isn't going to be much of an ecosystem for it, but it actually does come very feature complete, and yeah. I think that the Symbian case proves that can work.
Yeah. I just a point of data and interest, the Nokia's E71 and E72, which many regular listeners and readers will know very well, I think Nokia did a stonking job. The part of the reason that those devices were so popular is they came with just about everything anyone would actually want. And just if you set up an E71 or E72 for a friend, for example, when you start looking at the built-in quick office, and then they've got font magnifier, and they've got the Psylock Traveller and conversion apps, they've got everything anyone could really ever want, certainly in their first 2 or 3 months. They're all preloaded on day one without even any need to go into the Obvi store. So there are specific device examples, and I'm using this as a trailer for Rafe's review of the Nokia E6, which he's now got, and that's had for about a week. And I'll be very interested to see, Rafe, how much of the existing E72 software kind of catalogue has been maintained for the E6.
Yeah, I do think we need to be careful here, and that there is a case for this kind of people don't need that many apps, but clearly we've seen in the last few years Android and iPhone have been able to get ahead of Nokia. I think one of the primary reasons has been UX, but the other secondary thing has been the availability of this aftermarket app store for games, but also for other applications. And sometimes it did throw away content, but nonetheless, it is, you know, attractive to consumers. And so while I do think there are a lot of people who aren't that concerned about apps, and there is this statistic, nobody needs more than 10 applications, the problem is that sometimes people need 10 different applications, and therefore you need a sizable catalogue in order to keep as many people happy as possible. And I think there is a lot to that. So there are two sides to this argument. So I think we have to be careful not to fall down too much on one side or the other, because I do believe the idea of apps, and I dislike using the word apps because I think it's quite limiting, and instead prefer to use kind of services, ecosystem, all the bits that are kind of extensibility, customization to the device, particular to an individual. I think that's going to become more important, and so I think we have to be careful about saying it's not, you know, it's okay, you can just use what you get out of the box, because I think an increasing number of people want more than that, and that trend will increase. But at the same time, we're quite right, so we shouldn't overhype this kind of need for apps. A lot of people are quite content with a device that does all the basics for them.
One final news item before we finish, because we're going to run long otherwise. Nokia World's dates have been announced. We've been holding on. They usually happen in the late autumn. This year it's on October the 26th and 27th, and it's at the Excel Centre in the east of London. Boo, hiss, yar. It takes miles to get and hours to get there, Rafe. But we will be there in force, won't we?
Yes, we will indeed be there in force. I think it's going to be a pretty exciting event. It doesn't really take a genius to work out that Nokia said they're going to announce their first Windows device in Q4, at least hope to, and there's this big Nokia event, so I wonder what's going to be happening there. However, I expect we'll probably also hear about some new Symbian devices and quite possibly more about Series 14. We haven't mentioned that much this week, but there were some exciting announcements about that in terms of what's going to happen with the next billion in Qt. Hopefully we'll get to them in a future podcast, because I think they are pretty important. But yes, Nokia World this year, I think we'll probably have more announcement than we've seen for quite some time, and that kind of reflects some of the changes that Stephen Elop's been able to bring in one sense. This will be his first big Nokia conference where he's had a direct say on what's being announced and how things are going. That'll happen more as we go into 2012. But yes, lots of exciting things to come. We'll be doing our best to bring you our usual comprehensive coverage, running around, getting all the latest stories, getting the inside story, getting the in-depth knowledge, which I know our audience likes very much.
And you can speak for yourself, Steve. It's right next to London City Airport. I can go Edinburgh Airport to London City, walk less than the distance from Terminal 5 at Heathrow to the Underground Station, and be at Excel. You and I could leave the house at the same time. I would probably beat you. So I think it's lovely that they're having it at Excel and not back in the centre of Earl's Court of London, because that takes forever to get into. What I find intriguing about Nokia World especially, there's very few single manufacturers that can run an entire conference just for their product. Apple is one of them. Arguably Samsung could, but I don't think we have an equivalent of Samsung World in the tech space. So the fact that Nokia is still basically going, look, we are the £500 gorilla in the room. We've slimmed down a bit. We're now the £450 gorilla with this new American diet. But we're still here, and we can still make a lot of noise, and it's still well attended by the press. Let's be honest, if they get it wrong, they'd have trouble doing it again next year. But there's so much respect in the room, and there's so much recognition of the size of Nokia that, they are one of the few companies that can do an event of this size and this scale and fill a good number of rooms at the Excel Centre, all with products and compelling stuff. The fact that we could put a video camera on Rafe and he can walk around the floor and we can stop recording 3 hours later, and we've only went through three tables because everybody stopped and went, hi Rafe, can I say hello? Tell you what I've been working on. Look, there's a little microphone hiding behind the dust cap of this Coca-Cola bottle. Crystal clear sound. And so on. So good for Nokia that they're still doing it.
That's a very good London accent, Ewan.
Oh, thank you very much. I do love you, Mary Poppins.
I think one of the best things about Nokia World is, apart from just saying, never mind all the big announcements and keynotes, it's actually going around the demonstration tables and actually seeing all the new and upcoming technology and actually seeing what's 2 or 3 years down the road live in action.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we will be there, so you now have the dates. And see our show notes of various links. There is an official Nokia site for the event as well. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. We have our Twitter accounts if you want to keep in touch with what the site's up to, at AAS, so please do follow that. I'm Steve Litchfield. We also have Rafe Blandford, David Gilson and Ewan to follow on Twitter. But for now, it's goodbye in Sussex.
From me, Rafe Blandford.
Goodbye up in Edinburgh.
Goodbye!
And the one who's left, goodbye up in Hull.
Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Catch you next time.
And it was a trade wind that travels down from the Sahara to the Gulf of Guinea.
Thank you, Ewan.